Good morning. Mr. Peterson, Mr. Bell, and I, that is to say, Harriet Bunn, are starting the fourth of this series of tapes. Up until now, we've discussed bacteriology. Mr. Peterson, William H. Peterson, Emeritus Professor of Biochemistry, will tell us about his experience working with Mr. Fred. Professor Peterson, I understand that you were associated with President Fred in research and other activities for many years. This was before he was president, of course. When did you first become acquainted with him?
Soon after he came to Wisconsin as assistant professor of agricultural bacteriology in September 1913. The biochemistry department, or agricultural chemistry as it was then called, and bacteriology were both housed in Agricultural Hall, and since we had some projects and facilities in common, everyone in the two departments knew everyone else. In my case, there was a special reason for becoming acquainted with Dr. Fred. He had taken his PhD in Germany 2 years earlier. I had taken mine in June of 1913 and was planning to spend the second semester in the summer of 1914 in Europe and to do research in Germany. Naturally, we had a good deal to talk about, and besides this, E.B. Fred is a person with whom it is easy to get acquainted.
You took your PhD here, as I understand it, Mr. Peterson. I suppose that was about 3 months before he came.
Yes, that's right.
Did you have any other contacts with him before beginning research together?
Oh, yes. After our hectic return from Europe during World War I, Mrs. Peterson and I went to live on Van Hise Avenue. A year later, Dr. and Mrs. Fred came to live just around the corner on Spooner Street. I had a garden plot and gave him and Professor Werner Finch half of the plot for their gardens. We had lots of good talks while working in our gardens. Later, while our house in College Hills was being finished, my wife and I lived with E.B. in his apartment until Mrs. Fred returned from Virginia. I think that example is characteristic of E.B. Fred's hospitality. He was always ready to do something, to do someone a good turn. I should like to tell you about the dishwashing incident.
And I'd like to hear about it.
After Mrs. Fred's return, Mrs. Peterson and I lived for a few weeks with Professor and Mrs. O.P. Watts across the street. There was a dinner at the Fred's, and we were among the guests. After dinner, E.B. invited the men to the kitchen to wash dishes while the ladies held converse in the living room. If the wife prepares the meal, the husband should help with the dishes. That seems like a very fair division of labor. The Fred's were always very genial and friendly hosts.
When did you and Dr. Fred begin research together?
Toward the end of the war in 1918, Fred had been assigned a project by the Bureau of Aircraft Production to produce acetic acid from pentose sugars. Acetic acid could be converted into acetone and other products required by the aircraft industry. Acetone, for example, was a solvent for the so-called dope that was applied to the surface of the airplane wings. Fred and Miss Audrey Davenport began hunting for bacteria that would convert pentose sugars to acetic acid. They found bacteria that made acid from pentoses, but was it acetic acid? As a chemist, that's where I came in. I was a volunteer biochemist on the poison gas research squad working under the direction of Professors Eister, Meek, and Lavenhart of the medical school. I gave Fred and Miss Davenport as much time as I could spare from my SATC teaching and the poison gas work, and when the war was ended in November, transferred to Dr. Fred's project. I think the Aircraft Bureau paid one half of my salary until February 1919. From the pentose work came our first joint paper entitled Acid Fermentation of Xylose. This paper appeared in the Journal of Biological Chemistry late in 1919. The pentose fermentation product projects proved so interesting and promising that we continued it, and from it developed lines of research that lasted for about 20 years. Our last paper together was published in 1937, 2 years after he became dean of the graduate school. The results of our work are covered in about 100 joint scientific papers on the metabolic products of bacteria, yeasts, and molds. This fermentation work led me into the vitamin requirements of microorganisms, and eventually into production of antibiotics, work that I'm still continuing after 50 years at Wisconsin. A large proportion of our work was done in the laboratories of the bacteriology department by men who were officially connected only with the biochemistry department. It was a unique situation and probably one of the closest associations between departments that has ever existed in the university. It was a fine tribute to the broad-minded thinking of the chairman of the two departments, Professors E.G. Hastings, bacteriology, and E.B. Hart, biochemistry.
I think that's very interesting, Mr. Peterson. And I suppose there were other people working with you also.
Oh, yes. We published many joint papers with Professors Steenbach, Hastings, and several on lake work with President Burge and Professor Jaudet, and some with Dr. Sherard of the Forest Products Laboratory. No man lives to himself in science any more than he does in social, political, or cultural life. Besides the staff members I have named, we've had a wonderful lot of research assistants.
Well, I think it would be a good idea if you'd tell us a little about them. They were young men and women both, I suppose.
Yes, in that long period from 1918 to 1937, we had working with us about 40 able research assistants and postdoctorates. Many of them have become distinguished scientists in their own right, to name only a few. Four are now professors at the University of Wisconsin, namely Elizabeth McCoy, P.W. Wilson, and W.B. Sarles in bacteriology, and M.J. Johnson and F.M. Strong in biochemistry. Others are heads of departments at other institutions, Harlan Wood at Western Reserve and Esmond Snell at University of California, Berkeley. Two others are members of the Rockefeller Institute in New York, D.W. Woolley and E.L. Tatum. Dr. Tatum was awarded a share of the Nobel Prize in Medicine and Physiology in 1958. In industry, two of our men are directors of research with great manufacturing companies, Oscar F. Langlicke of E.R. Squibb and Sons, and Frank E. Fontaine of Letterly Laboratories. What an opportunity we have had, and what a challenge it has been to work with such men. My recipe for success in research is to get a half dozen of the smartest assistants you can find, and then see if you can keep up with them. There will be no dull or idle moments in your life.
Well, I understand you were very good at not only getting these able assistants, but at keeping them. And I'd like to know the recipe for having them stay here when other people can pay them more.
First of all, you go out and hunt for them. You write personal letters to your colleagues in other institutions, asking if they have anyone to recommend, and you read all applications and letters about them very carefully, and then try to make your offer as attractive as possible in order to get them to come to Wisconsin.
Well, how are you able to fulfill these promises under our circumstances?
You help them to get started in research at once. Work with them and let them feel that it's a team proposition. It takes years to learn to do research. You can't learn to do it by listening to lectures. Success is largely a matter of hard work, but it helps if you enjoy doing it. In E.B. Fred's laboratory, there were lots of good times together. Ice cream parties to celebrate something, or a box of candy to pay somebody's bet. Fred used to say that he liked to have men who wanted to work 8 days a week. Some students said he was a slave driver, but the slaves were a happy and devoted lot of people. E.B. Fred's skill in putting and keeping men at work is one of his outstanding qualities.
Yes, that's what they're still saying. I suppose you had other contacts with him as well.
Yes, in 1922, the Commercial Solvents Corporation of Terre Haute, Indiana, was having a great deal of trouble with their fermentation process for the production of acetone and butanol. Professors Hastings, Fred, and I were consultants with them, and from January to September 1923. Dr. Fred was their research director. He was given leave of absence from the university during this time and organized their first research laboratory. My first PhD, O.R. Brunko, joined this laboratory in February 1923 and later was their sales manager. I spent part of the summer in 1923 at Terre Haute, and I think before the summer was over, we were able to show that a large part of their trouble was due to contamination from lactic acid bacteria. Another trouble was phage, or virus infection. The bacteriophage hit another butyl alcohol plant in Puerto Rico. Dr. Fred, who was then dean of the graduate school, organized a team headed by Dr. Baldwin that included Professors McCoy and M.J. Johnson of biochemistry and several assistants. Miss McCoy immunized the culture several times, and eventually the Wisconsin team got the plant into production. The contacts with Commercial Solvents resulted in their establishing one of the first industrial fellowships at the university. The university has many such grants and aid from industry today. The funds from the Commercial Solvents Corporation helped to finance the research of P.W. Wilson and Elizabeth McCoy and gave us professors intimate knowledge of problems and operations in industry. I also served with Dr. Fred and Dean Slichter's research committee during one summer. After he became dean, I headed the WARF Fellowship Committee. I served as chairman of that committee under Deans Baldwin and Elvium. That committee canvasses the country for Dean Slichter's, quotes, young men of exceptional talent and originality, unquote. We selected several hundred WARF fellows. Dr. Fred called them his blue ribbon horses. Serving on that committee was one of my most rewarding experiences at the university.
Well, as we were saying, it takes money to do successful or do any kind of research. Who financed your work?
Dean Slichter obtained from the legislature a special fund for research in any field in the university. Fred and I applied for and received a small grant from this fund. Dean Slichter gave us generous support, and if there were any unused funds at the end of the year, allowed us to ask for money with which to buy some piece of apparatus. As we got going, we received funds from the Commercial Solvents Corporation, the College of Agriculture, National Kraut Packers Association, Wisconsin Alumni Association, and the Frasch Foundation. I should like to tell you a little about the Frasch Grant.
Before you do that, I wish you'd tell just a little about kraut, so we'll get that in there. We've got just a minute.
How much kraut a year did you fellows pack?
Oh, sometimes we packed as much as 100 barrels. That was one of the most useful lines of research we had. We even had a good stand-in with the mechanics department. Sometimes we'd send a half barrel of kraut over there, and if we wanted any work done, they would come a-running. Even President Glenn Frank liked our kraut.
Now, back to Frash and the grant.
The Herman Frash Foundation was set up by Mrs. Frash as a memorial to her husband. It was organized to support research in agricultural chemistry. I suggested to Dr. Fred that we should apply for funds to support research on the fixation of nitrogen by root nodule bacteria. That was a main line of Dr. Fred's research before the pentose fermentation work began. I didn't know much about the problem, but made a rough draft of an application, and Dr. Fred filled in the scientific details. We sent in the application, and as we didn't hear anything about it for a long time, we practically forgot about the matter. After a year or more, a letter came to Dean Russell's office saying a grant of $40,000 had been awarded to the College of Agriculture. I think the notification must have been obscurely worded, as neither the dean nor Dr. Fred connected the award with our project. We talked about the matter, and finally it dawned on me that perhaps it referred to our application. That grant certainly was a windfall and a surprise to us. Frosh money financed P.W. Wilson's research for several years and enabled us to recruit a very able man for our faculty. Our biggest help, however, came from the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation. After this organization began operating and giving money to the graduate school, Dean Schlichter set up a project on the metabolism of moles and invited staff members to submit applications. Dr. Fred and I applied and were awarded a grant of $10,000 per year for 5 years. Professor Harry Steenbach gave us much help in the organization of the work and was an active participant on the nutritional aspects of the project. He was a joint author on several papers dealing with the biosynthesis of vitamins and the nutritional aspects of mold mycelium.
You had some very interesting personal times with Dr. Fred, too. As a wind-up, perhaps you'd care to make a little comment on him as a man.
Well, I could make many, many interesting comments about him. I think I've indicated that he is a good scientist, a born organizer, and an indefatigable worker. With it all, he has a warm personality and is a good man to work with, a man with whom you can disagree and still like him. I hesitate to use the word charm in describing him because it is a quality more often ascribed to women, but he has it.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. This is Harriet Bunn. Yesterday, on October 23rd, I went to see Dr. Noble Clark, College of Agriculture, who had not only was a colleague of Dr. E.B. Fred's, but also a friend, and was really eager to tell some of his experiences with Dr. Fred and something of Dr. Fred's career in agriculture and bacteriology. "It is impossible," said Dr. Clark, "to think of Dr. E.B. Fred without Dean Russell. Russell came to the university from Poinet, year we will look up. He was the son of a country doctor. As a student, he really didn't know what he wanted to do. At that time, Burge was the dean of letters and science. And he became interested in Russell. The requirements in the School of Agriculture were not nearly so high as they are now, although they were about the same as those in English. Physical chemistry, as it was then called, was taught over in letters and science. Engineering was no more than a trade school, and there was no research in the School of Agriculture. We'll check on some of this from the history of the School of Agriculture, as Dr. Clark suggested. At that time, the School of Agriculture applied phases of what was taught over in letters and science, in botany and in zoology. It irritated Dean Russell that he should have no funds for research in agriculture. Russell had been abroad, get a graduate degree. He'd studied under Koch in Europe, and he'd come back to Wisconsin. And still, Burge wanted all this money for research over in letters and science. Russell, now dean of the College of Agriculture, or School of Agriculture, not sure which, was determined to improve his school. At first, there was something like an armed truce between him and Burge, but later on, it became a sort of guerrilla warfare. Dean Russell argued that no ag student was as good as he should be unless he understood not only the results, but also the why of things. His students should know the why as well as the what. For example, in soda, we have an alkali to neutralize acids. It isn't enough to know that. The student should also know how to apply this knowledge and why the results are such as they are. At that time, work in the ag school consisted chiefly in the curing of cheese, in work on bovine tuberculosis, and in heat treatment for vegetables, pressure canning, that was. Russell saw opportunities far more, and he never gave up. He not only proved his point, but he also won his point by hiring people who could develop the school for him. One of the foremost was Dr. Edwin Brun Fred, also Dr. Stephen Babcock, who worked with Dr. Fred. E.B. Fred, picked by Russell, became the epitome of the philosophy of Russell against that of Burge. As one of the men who primarily won his recognition in the basic and not in the applied fields, what Dean Russell required of his men was broad science in basic fields and at the same time the ability to advise personally with farmers and industrialists who wanted help. There's a story which I hope Dr. Clark will want to tell about a chair by Dr. Fred's desk where people, most of them farmers who came to him for help, sat so long telling their troubles that the secretaries began to try to devise ways to dislodge them. Finally, Miss Judy Riley suggested that these guests might not take up so much of Dr. Fred's time if a straight, uncomfortable chair replaced the armchair in which they sat. At least, by having an uncomfortable chair, there was a chance for more people to ask Dr. Fred more questions. This if Dr. Clark wishes to tell it in his own words. Okay, that story came from me. I got somewhere else. E.B. Fred came to the university in 1913, a handsome young Southerner and a bachelor. He had a Southern accent. He lectured to many young ladies who seemed very happy to be his students, although of this he took no notice at all. Dr. Fred and W.H. Peterson were partners in research and grad teaching. An outstanding example they gave of interdependent cooperation in research. They had grad students in large numbers from all over the world. Most of the work in research was done in the basement. I think that word is, these are Dr. Clark's notes, which I'm following specifically, in the basement of Ag Hall. But some was done in ag chemistry, which is now biochemistry. Fred had an early interest put a good deal of emphasis on factors associated with symbiotic nitrogen fixation in the role of legumes and a bacteria, which I will spell R-H-I-Z-O-B-I-A, however you pronounce that, Rhizobia bacteria, and jointly filing, in nodules on the roots of the plants. There's an initial here that I can't get. And thereby supplying the plant food to other plants grown in association with legumes or crops grown in succeeding years. Ira Baldwin worked on these problems as a graduate student and took over major bacteriological responsibility about 1927. Other studies dealt with the production of more efficient cultures of nodule bacteria to be used by farmers in inoculating legume seeds. Fred and Peterson gave major attention to other beneficial uses of bacteria, the making of industrial products by fermentation processes such as butyl, B-U-T-Y-L, alcohol, acetone, and other solvents. Another beneficial use of bacteria was in connection with fermentations of silage to prevent spoilage. Pioneered forage, F-O-R-A-G-E, I think, or grass silage made in addition to corn silage. Then there is a story about sauerkraut, which Dr. Clark tells very well. He's only indicated it here as sauerkraut cultures wash only. E.B. Fred was always the first man to get to work. They used to say he opened agricultural halls so the janitor and the staff could get in. Every day, all day, was work and study, but also there was fun in the work. He had a brilliant mind, a wonderful memory, a marvelous knowledge of the world's literature, and he made many suggestions to grad students during a morning tour.